Yo, this is Axl Rose of Guns N' Roses.
Hey, this is Carmen Electra.
Hi, this is Daryl Strawberry.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop D-O-double-G.
Hi, this is Don Sally.
Hey, yo, Hulk Hogan here.
What's up? This is Beyonce. I got a great show lined up for y'all.
Hey, yo, let's get this party started.
The Sports Beat.
You know what? Let's keep it hot.
The Sports Beat
is off the chain, man.
The Sports Beat.
Download the podcast now.
You're listening to The Sports Beat with Richard Holdridge.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Sports Beat with Richard Holdridge, presented by Georgia Alabama Sports Live. This is a special President's Day edition. I hope that you are all having a great President's Day, as this is a very special episode. I'm going to have my first crossover show with Braves Country Radio with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks. I hope you enjoy it. On tomorrow's show, I'm going to break down the brackets for the high school basketball playoffs in Alabama and Georgia, and I'm going to talk about college basketball. But we had a very fun weekend calling high school basketball games on Georgia Alabama Sports Live. On Friday, I was up in Noonan calling the Heritage Pacelli Region Championships, and Pacelli with the clean sweep over the Heritage Hawks. And being in Noonan and calling a basketball game up there, it's a very special feeling because this radio station is broadcasted out of Noonan, and so that really meant a lot to me. I've already called an East Coweta basketball game earlier in the season, and I was very impressed with Heritage and just the way they really laid out the red carpet for us when we were calling the game. As this was the first official week without football, I know a lot of sports fans really took a break. I didn't watch any sports over the weekend. The NBA All-Star Game is just starting to become a joke. I mean, really, they absolutely play no defense, and it seems like every year the score just gets higher and higher. The Eastern Conference wins 211 to 186. I mean, come on. There's like no defense. We had NBA All-Star Weekend as Damian Lillard wins the three-point contest. He also wins the All-Star Game MVP. Mac McClung, the back-to-back slam dunk champion. And like I mentioned, there's not a whole lot going on. I mean, we were calling the Spencer girls and boys in the region championship on Saturday. And that's really where my time was invested in, as I will break down all the teams that are in the playoffs next week as they start tomorrow. The girls will start on the 20th. The boys will start on the 21st. And there's a lot of games. I have never witnessed a time in Columbus where we've had this many teams that are in the playoffs. You got a lot of home playoff games that are starting at 6. And then you also got some teams that are on the road for the first time since 1999, the Columbus Blue Devils making the playoffs. For the first time since 2012, the Jordan Lady Red Jackets making the playoffs. It's really a fun time to be a basketball fan in Columbus. The Columbus River Dragons win their 15th straight as they get ready for a big road trip up to Detroit to take on the Motor City Rockers. The Columbus State Cougars fall to South Carolina Aiken, snapping a three-game win streak. 88-64, South Carolina Aiken, 19-5 overall, 10-4 in the Peach Belt. Columbus State falls to 12-11 overall and 6-8 in the Peach Belt. Columbus State was led by Jarrett Adderton and Wisdom Yubo, both chipping in with 15 points. And they will next take on Flagler College in St. Augustine, Florida on Wednesday. Meanwhile, the Columbus State Lady Cougars continue winning as they have won four straight games. They defeat South Carolina Aiken 76-65. Columbus State is now 14-8 overall, 10-4 in the Peach Belt. and they are led by Breland Snipes, 20 points. Latoya Reeves also chipped in with 17. The Lady Cougars will also be in action against Flagler College on Wednesday down in St. Augustine. And you can catch those games on the Peach Belt Network, Cougar TV, 88.5 WCUG. Also a reminder, Columbus Lions training camp begins February the 25th, and it will run through March the 8th on the campus of St. Ann Pacelli right there at Dymel Field. Looking forward to seeing the Columbus Lions go back-to-back as they did win the AIFA championship last year. Now they're in a new league in the American Indoor Football League, and the Columbus Lions home opener will be April the 12th. And yes, all-world quarterback Marcus Brooks is coming back for his second season with the Columbus Lions. I'm excited about that, and looking forward to the Columbus Lions playing their games in the Columbus Civic Center. Also over the weekend, they had the NFCA Leadoff Classic at the South Common Softball Complex, where a bunch of NAIA schools were in action Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, including my alma mater, Freed Hardeman University. I happened to be in attendance on Friday, as there were six fields in action. My alma mater was at the main stadium. They were taking on Coastal Georgia. They do get the win there. But you had William Carey College. You had Kentucky Christian. You had some Georgia schools like Truett McConnell and Georgia Gwinnett and Thomas University. And I think that it was a great success. And I talked to the Columbus Sports Council, and they're excited about the NAIA World Series that's going to be back at the South Common Softball Complex in May. And I always get press credentials for that. I enjoy covering it. And I want to try to make sure that they get their flowers, because this was a great event that was put on by the Columbus Sports Council. By the way, this Saturday, it is the Hall of Fame induction ceremony for the 2024 class for the Chattahoochee Valley Sports Hall of Fame, and that is going to be at the Columbus Trade and Convention Center. Tickets are $35, and I'm excited about seeing this new class for 2024, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Now, on Friday, the Georgia Sports Hall of Fame are having their banquet ceremony, and you got great athletes like Eric Berry, Sharif Abdul-Rahim, and Chris Carpenter, and also legendary head football coach at Georgia Tech, Paul Johnson, all being inducted into the 2024 class for the Georgia Sports Hall of Fame. All right, right now we're going to go ahead and take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to have part one of the crossover show that I did with Mag McGee. As I stay tuned, we got hour one of the crossover show between the Sports Beat with Richard Holdridge and Braves Country Radio with Mag McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks. And also on his show, I'm going to be a guest. So it's going to be awesome. Get ready for the next 2 hours to have a great sports talk radio. Don't forget, I'll be back on tomorrow. Special guest, Columbus State head basketball coach Robert Moore and Columbus State girls head basketball coach Matt Hauser coming on the show tomorrow talking about the season. I'm going to have my bracketology show. I'm going to break down the brackets in high school basketball for the GHSA and the GIAA. We have got so many amazing teams that are hosting playoff games in the first round on Tuesday and Wednesday. That'll do it here. Stay tuned. Mac McGee is coming on the show. You don't want to go anywhere. It's a Sports Beat with Richard Holdridge, presented by Georgia Alabama Sports Live, and we will be right back.
Active Pest Control offers the best services and prices to protect your home, offering both monthly and quarterly pest control services, plus specific services like bed bugs, German roach, and flea control. Even if you can't see them, insects are all around you 24/7. Active Pest Control wants to be the first line of defense. Active Pest Control, repair, bond, best termite coverage around. Active Pest Control, 34 Jefferson Street, Newnan, 770-954-9941.
It's the best in sports and entertainment. And get locked in and locked down with Rhino Radio Penitentiary, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. with your host, me, Ryan O'Neill, each and every morning right here with the best in sports and entertainment, all the way from professional sports to college sports to River Dragons hockey and everything in between, including some of the very best local and national guests. It's the Rhino Radio Penitentiary, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., Monday through Fridays, right here on 99.1 FM WQEE.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Tune in each Sunday morning right here on WQEE 99.1 FM for The Key for Help from a High with Bishop Daniel Hardaway Sr. of Redemptive Life Worship Center at 9 a.m. Hear the Word of God and soak it in. You can join us for our live Sunday service at 10 o'clock a.m. till 12:30 p.m. at Redemptive Life Worship Center at 2265 Highway 54 in Marlin, Georgia. Have a blessed week.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sports Beat with Richard Holdridge, presented by Georgia Alabama Sports Live. I hope you're enjoying your President's Day. This is a very special episode. It is our crossover episode, as we have got Mac McGee from Braves Country Radio with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks. He is on from 3 to 5 on WQEE, right on after me. Mac, how you doing?
Hey, howdy, hi, and how the hell are you? Doing pretty good. Excited for this show. And for those of y'all who plan on sticking around for the whole thing, the first hour and the second hour, this hour and the next hour, will all be crossover. So we're talking everything in the world of sports, essentially. I believe we said we're going to start off with some NFL and get that out of the way, since it's a, you know, it's essentially a season that's dead, but does it ever really end when you look at the draft is right around the corner?
Absolutely. And the NFL Combine in about a month. We are about a week removed from Super Bowl 58, where the Kansas City Chiefs really just ripped the hearts out of 49er fans, 25-22. So many things went wrong for the San Francisco 49ers in this Super Bowl. I actually had to rewatch this, because after that interception, the 49ers were in Kansas City territory. They were up 10-3, and the 49ers could not punch it in, and they went 3-and-out on their first three possessions in the second half. A lot of people are blaming Kyle Shanahan's play call. I mean, Christian McCaffrey only touched the ball a couple of times in the second half, and really, I don't pin this on Brock Purdy. I think that the Chiefs' defense made the plays when they had to force the 49ers to kick a field goal, to force them to not score a touchdown. I mean, they really needed to score a touchdown in that overtime. I'm okay with them taking the ball to start that overtime, because that defense was on the field and Patrick Mahomes was driving the length of the field. Hats off to the 49ers defense for making the Chiefs kick that field goal to send it to overtime. But, I mean, it's pretty much automatic, right, Mac? Yes, Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid. You can never bet against this coach quarterback combo in the Super Bowl, and the Chiefs win their third straight. The Chiefs win their third Super Bowl.
Yeah, so just so I know that you're a 49er fan, right?
Yes, I am.
I have no dog in the hunt. I'm not a Chiefs fan. I'm not a 49er fan. I was pulling for the over and the Chiefs plus 6.5. That's my world. We do a lot of sports betting on Braves Country Radio. But I would have liked, in a perfect world, I would have liked to have seen the 49ers win that game and the Chiefs cover. I'm with you. A lot was made about the fact that they took the ball first, but it's like you just said, their defense had to have been gassed. I think that was the thought process from Shanahan. Now, look, I know it didn't work because they went right down the field and scored, and I get that part of it. But I think he was hoping that they could gather themselves And I see that the 49ers have fired their defensive coordinator. Is that something that you think is fair?
No, not at all. He was a scapegoat. I thought his defensive scheme was great in the Super Bowl. I mean, look, the 49ers have known for their defense. 2019, Robert Saleh, he gets a coaching job with the Jets. You got D'Amico Ryans doing a fantastic job with Houston. And Steve Wilks, he's been a coach before. I thought he didn't get a fair shake in Arizona. He was a one-and-done coach. I thought he should have got the interim job, the head coaching job in Carolina when he was the interim coach when Matt Rhule was fired. And I think that Kyle Shanahan had to pass blame somewhere. They said it wasn't a good fit. I still think, you know, with the talent that the 49ers have on defense, it was a tough task to go up against Patrick Mahomes, which right now he is chasing Tom Brady as the GOAT. And I think even with that great 49er defense that has the talent, they couldn't stop Patrick Mahomes, especially in the Super Bowl, especially in overtime. I don't know what direction that the 49ers go. I know that there's talks. Brandon Staley, the former Chargers head coach, he was a great defensive coordinator with the Rams. I mean, they're throwing out names out here like Bill Belichick. I mean, come on. Bill Belichick is not going to accept the defensive coordinator position in San Francisco. I think that they're going to try to go in a different direction.
First of all, you're Shanahan. You hire Belichick. What are you doing? Just hiring the guy that's going to take your job? Like what?
Yeah, exactly.
There, right? Yeah. I think Belichick's going to take the year off. You know, more likely scenario, though, I think he's going to take the year off too. Me being a Titans fan, Vrabel would be a great hire. But
absolutely.
But I think he views himself as a head coach now, and I don't really see that happening at all. But yeah, I'm with you. It felt scapegoatish. You know, that defense was pretty good. I will say during the playoffs, I was surprised how big of a sieve the run defense was. But evidently, I didn't watch a lot of 49ers games, and evidently that was an issue all year long. But I think you hit the nail on the head. First of all, turning the ball over inside the 10, and I know Kansas City did it too. But when you do that and you come out in the second half, and what'd you say, three consecutive possessions, no points?
Yes.
Against Patrick Mahomes in a tight game, that's usually going to come back to bite you.
It absolutely did. And the muff punt didn't help. I mean, I know it was a freakish play. Right. Daryl Luter hit it off his foot, and Ray McLeod just couldn't field it properly. And the Chiefs were gift-wrapped a touchdown because on the next play, Patrick Mahomes got a Marquez Valdes-Scantling in the end zone. And that really brought life to the Kansas City Chiefs. Before that, the Kansas City Chiefs were stopped. The 49ers defense was able to stop them, holding them to two field goals. And I really think that the momentum in that Super Bowl flipped to Kansas City when they got that gift touchdown.
Yeah, and the other thing is when you're looking at a game against Kansas City, first of all, you can't have the big mistakes because of their experience. And what surprised me was they actually kept Pacheco in check. He ended up with, I know the over-under was like 65.5. I think he got 58. And on 18 carries, pretty darn good. But one of the things that I don't think a lot of people paid attention to, kind of jumped off the screen with me after the game, looking at the stats the next day, Patrick Mahomes had like 66 yards rushing. And
incredible.
And really all that was doing was extending drives, right? You know, he didn't have – it's not like he's Lamar Jackson going to take off for a 65-yard run. But he's athletic enough where you got to pay attention to him. And do I think the better team won? I don't know, because I think if they would have played another two quarters, there's no telling. I think if those two teams play 10 times, you're going to get about a 5-5 split. But in that moment, when you have a chance to step on the neck of the champion, you got to do it, because if you let them hang around, next thing you know, you're on the ropes.
Also, Mac, I think that the Dre Greenlaw injury had a huge impact on the 49ers defense. Dre Greenlaw is the type of linebacker that goes sideline to sideline. I think that Patrick Mahomes was able to find Travis Kelce on that big third down play, the 22-yard scant right before they kicked the field goal to send it to overtime. I don't think that happens if Dre Greenlaw is in the game. I think that Dre Greenlaw can bottle up the run, and I don't think Patrick Mahomes rushes for 66 yards if Dre Greenlaw is still in the game.
You know, how in the hell does he always get open? You know what I mean?
Like, he's Kelce, he's great.
And although the 49ers did a great job in the first half, I feel like that's the guy that I would be more concerned about than anyone else on that field, other than obviously Patrick Mahomes. But it dumbfounds me. Against Baltimore, he got 11 receptions. And most of those, he was wide open. Now, I will say that San Francisco played a much, much closer to the vet. But it's unreal because it's not like he's this unbelievable athlete comparative to the other players on the field, right? But he has a knack of finding his pockets and getting – it's almost like he wears camouflage and everyone, oh, yeah, I forgot about this guy. Maybe we should get number 87. You know, maybe we should pay attention to him every once in a while. What was your thoughts on the blow-up between him and – or him on Andy Reid?
Well, I think that – there's like hundreds of cameras at the Super Bowl, and Travis Kelce had the right to be upset that he wasn't in there, because if he was blocking, maybe Kansas City doesn't turn over the Pacheco fumble. But for him to blow up at his coach like that, and 123 million people saw it, it's just not a good look. I mean, he later apologized on his podcast. I mean, he did not mean to do that. But I think in the heat of the moment, he's a competitor. He wants to be in on that play. I don't think that he should have done that to his coach, a very well-respected coach in Andy Reid. But also, I think the media kind of blew it out of proportion as well.
My biggest takeaway from it was I would have had a little more respect for it if when he was on the up there on the podium singing Viva Las Vegas, if before that he would have said, I got to say something, guys. I was out of control. I want everyone to understand that, you know, that's not the right thing to do. Because whether he likes it or not, with him dating Taylor Swift, third Super Bowl championship, he's a role model for these kids. And these kids see
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Right? And I don't want to get the answer that Charles Barkley gave us 30 years ago. Says, I'm not a role model. Because even he,
right,
since then, has gone, I may not like it, but I am a role model. Right? And I don't think it was that big a deal, but I do believe that if it was regular season, Andy Reid is sending him to the showers at least for the rest of the half, right? And I get the fact, hey, you're trying to win the Super Bowl. I don't want to take my best dude out. Because then that turns into a whole thing. You lose the Super Bowl, then everyone's going to be like, well, maybe you shouldn't let your ego get in the way, all that junk, right? But It was a mistake, and people make mistakes, and I get that. I just wish that he didn't wait until his podcast to apologize. He had a much big, although it's a very popular podcast, he had a much bigger stage right there before he sat there and sang Viva Las Vegas. So,
well, I'll tell you what, Mac, if I wasn't a San Francisco 49ers fan, as a casual football fan, I would have thought this was an incredible Super Bowl. It was the second Super Bowl that went to overtime. It was the most watched Super Bowl, most watched TV show since the moon landing. We had 123 million people see it, and I thought it was a great Super Bowl. A lot of people were skeptical about, oh, here we go again. It's another Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl. We saw this 4 years ago, but I was impressed. The Super Bowl turned out great, and the Chiefs end up winning it on a walk-off touchdown to Nyko Hardman. I mean, who would have thought? This was a guy that was written off. The Chiefs let him go. The Jets could not utilize him. The Chiefs end up getting him back, and that just tells you that when you're in a system, you can thrive. And Nyko Hardman, you know, he was like a Tyreek Hill type player, you know, and the Chiefs couldn't afford Tyreek Hill, so they traded him to Miami. But the Chiefs get it done, and now we're talking about the next dynasty, the team of the 2020s, and they're looking to three-peat. No team in NFL history in the Super Bowl era has ever three-peated, and the Kansas City Chiefs right now, they do have the second odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl in 2025. But, yeah, this was the year to beat the Chiefs, Mac. If you're going to beat the Chiefs, this was a very vulnerable team in the regular season. They didn't have a number one wide receiver. Although Rashid Rice is young, I mean, he could get there someday. But, yeah, the 49ers had their chance, and they blew it. And they should have beaten the Chiefs because they had dominated the Chiefs in that first half, and they just could not put them away.
I still wouldn't close the book on this 49ers team. First of all, anyone who wants to complain about the 49ers-Chiefs again, first of all, arguably the two best teams in the sport. It wasn't like anyone backed their way into it. The other thing
absolutely.
This isn't the same 49ers team, right? We didn't have Jimmy Steroids behind center today or Sunday. We didn't have, you know, CMC wasn't on this roster. This is a much different team. So for people to think that you can't look at the logos and say, well, you know, they're playing each other again, right? It's just like, look, I'm a diehard Celtic fan. When the Celtics and Lakers met up in 2008 for the championship, that was KG and Paul Pierce, not Bird and McHale. Like, it's just because they're wearing the same laundry has nothing to do with the other.
And I agree, the 49ers are going to be back next year. They actually have the best odds on to win the Super Bowl in 2025. And I want to say something about Brock Purdy. Yeah, he actually played pretty good.
Well, that and the fact that the AFC is so much deeper than the NFC right now. But you got to figure they're going to be, if they're not the one seed, they're a two or three seed. And that gives you the best chances. What they're looking at with Kansas City is Joe Burrow's going to be healthy, right?
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers is going to be healthy. Jim Harbaugh is going to be running the show, not Staley. And not to mention all the other factors in the AFC is just a much more loaded conference because there's a quarterback conference and the better quarterbacks are in the AFC. So Kansas City could be better next year and still not get to the Super Bowl because they're going to have a gauntlet to go through.
And I agree, and I think their division got a lot better, especially with Jim Harbaugh with the Chargers, Justin Herbert. He's finally got a quarterback, and I think he's going to have success. We don't know if Russell Wilson is going to stay with Denver.
Oh, he gone.
He's gone. And then you know that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to get released by the Raiders, so the Raiders are going to be looking for a quarterback.
Is he going
to
end up in
But I do think the Chargers are going to probably be the biggest threat to Kansas City in that division. And you're right, Joe Burrow's coming back. You know, Lamar Jackson is still in the AFC. I mean, you know that Miami, if they play at home, I think that they are just an unstoppable offense. I still think that, you know, it was just a game where the elements were just not in Miami's favor. It was like -7 degrees. But I think that the Chiefs proved something this year, winning two games on the road against Buffalo and against Baltimore. And it just goes to show that the champions step up when it matters the most, even though they had not a very good regular season. I mean, I saw that game on Christmas where it looked like the Raiders just physically dominated them, but the Kansas City Chiefs come out on top. It's going to be tough to try to three-peat next year, but you're right, Mac. The AFC is going to be with a lot of talented teams like Buffalo, Baltimore, Cincinnati's going to be back. I'm kind of curious what Pittsburgh's going to look like with Arthur Smith as the offensive coordinator. I mean, we know their defense is great. If their offense does anything, and they just released Mitchell Trubisky, but if they get a quarterback, look out, because the Steelers do have weapons. I think the Steelers could be a good team.
You know, the rumor that I'm hearing is the Steelers are interested in bringing in Ryan Tannehill.
That's the rumor I heard, too, because he worked under Arthur Smith when Smith was the offensive coordinator for Tennessee that got them to the AFC Championship in 2019. They were the overall number one seed in 2021. I think that would be a good fit for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
It would be a good quarterback to bring in with but he has to have the understanding it's not automatic that you're getting the starting job. Because this is...
Oh, he's got to work for it.
This is Kenny's team as of right now going forward. But we're going to give you the opportunity, and if you outplay him, then maybe he needs to be Jordan Love. Maybe he needs to sit behind you for a year, right?
Right.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where he goes. I can tell you, as a Titans fan, they can have him. Tannehill is fine if everything's perfect. Meaning, you need to have a good defense, a good running game, and he can play action. But he's getting long in the tooth, and Tennessee was turning the page. I like Tannehill. I'll pull for him, but I don't have a lot of belief that he's going to do great things, because when it's all said and done, first of all, he does get hurt a lot, and that's an issue.
Right.
But that's why a team like Pittsburgh would be perfect, because it's not like Pickett's so awful that you can't have him on the field, right? He just hasn't taken that next step yet. And, I mean, that's going to happen with the young kid. I think one of the biggest disservice that these kids get in today's NFL is they get thrown into the fire quickly because of the money. And they're looking at the clock ticking, and a lot of teams are looking at it. If I don't win a Super Bowl on his rookie contract, or at least get close to it, we're going to have a hard time sustaining this.
I also think, as Arthur Smith is the offensive coordinator, he needs to utilize his weapons. He did not do that in Atlanta when he was the head coach with Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, Drake London. I thought that they should have had more catches. Bijan Robinson should have had more touches. You got George Pickens. I think George Pickens is a phenomenal wide receiver that just does not get utilized as much as he should. He should be a Pro Bowl wide receiver that gets about 100 catches in a season, but hopefully Arthur Smith had his lesson learned as the coach of the Falcons. Now he's taking a step back. He's the OC in Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh is set up for success.
The biggest thing with Arthur Smith, from what I saw of it this year, he could not identify that Ridder wasn't it. And that worries you as a head coach. As a coordinator, it doesn't worry you as much, because I'll tell you who our quarterbacks are going to be, right? You just need to implement, put the guys in the right spots. He was a solid offensive coordinator for Tennessee. Nobody really shed a tear when he left, I can tell you that. I was a little shocked that he got a head coaching job, but I wished him the best and started pulling for Atlanta the year that he got there. I was like, all right, let's see what happens here. And it's just game after game after game. What I saw of Arthur Smith was, it is obvious Desmond Ridder isn't it. And you keep trying to jam that square peg in the round hole, and you have all this talent around you. That's all Atlanta needs is a quarterback. And I know you can say that about a lot of teams, but you look at the Atlanta defense, it's pretty good. You look at their skill set, pretty good. I'd say that they need to improve line play a little bit, sure. But all in all, it's a pretty good job. That's why I thought Belichick and Vrabel were going to be banging on the door to take that job. And let's not forget this. It is a terrible division. So you can win that division, get a home game in the playoffs. You can probably do that by going 10-7.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question. Falcons should be improved next year under Coach Raheem Morris. And that's where I want to go, Mac. I'm in Georgia. We talk about the Falcons all the time. I know that you're on WQEE from 3 to 5, and so I know a lot of fans and people that listen to your show have an invested interest in the Atlanta Falcons, a team that's turning a new chapter. Raheem Morris, he's got a new philosophy. I think that the first thing that the Falcons need to address is getting a quarterback in there. And I would waste no time. I would pick a quarterback in the 2024 NFL draft. Even if you get a veteran in there, like maybe a Carson Wentz, because he's worked with Zach Robinson, the new offensive coordinator. You let Carson Wentz get in, and maybe he wins the starting job, and whoever they draft in the 2024 NFL draft can sit behind Carson Wentz for a year. Now you have the quarterback of the future. Carson Wentz knows Zach Robinson's system, and he could get the job done. I think if Jaden Daniels is on the board, you go get him. But there's also Michael Penix Jr. There's J.J. McCarthy. There's Bo Nix. You have got to draft a quarterback. I know the latest mock draft I saw, Mac, they got them taking Dallas Turner. I mean, yeah, you could use an edge rusher. I really think you go get Chase Young. I think you give whatever Chase Young wants, because I don't think the 49ers are going to afford to keep him. But I think the Falcons need to get a quarterback in the 2024 draft.
Yeah, so for me, it's a hard pass on Chase Young, because after what I saw in the NFC Championship game, where he didn't want to get dirty. It's one thing to have an edge rusher, but I don't want to overpay for an edge rusher when he's not going to get his nose bloody.
So, but he did have a good Super Bowl.
He did have a good Super Bowl, and I get that. But that goes to the, well, what the hell is going on? Are you going to constantly be making business decisions your entire career where you're worried about that next contract and you don't want to get hurt? Because I'm going off the assumption that he's going to get a big pile of cash, right?
Right.
If he's getting a big pile of cash, I just don't think Chase Young is it. I think he's a very good edge rusher. I think you're great to have him in when you know it's second long or third down. But I'm going to be a little hesitant to give a lot of money to a guy that I'm like, well, we can't use him on first down. Well, we can't use him on the goal line because he's going to get pushed around like a rag doll. So let me throw a scenario out at you. I talked about this last year. Didn't happen. But now Arthur Smith's gone. You don't have to listen to what he thinks as a quarterback. Dude, go get Justin Fields and let's go. You get Justin Fields in the Atlanta Falcons offense with Bijan Robinson, Algier coming off the bench, or even in something scarier, what if you ran the wishbone? No one would know what the hell to do with that. And then, of course, you still got Kyle Pitts. You got Drake London. You got some talent across the board. And I don't think you have to give up a number one pick. I think Chicago is going to draft a quarterback. If they weren't drafting a quarterback, I feel like they're trading out of that, right?
Right.
So if Chicago's drafting a quarterback, they're not going to get stuck with Justin Fields going into camp because then there's going to be a lot of who's the starter junk going on. So they're going to want to trade earlier than later because if they trade too late, then they're going to be grasping at straws. So Atlanta has the 43rd pick overall in the second round. For folks, it's the 11th pick in the second round. I think that's all it would take, a second round and maybe a much later pick or maybe a pick next year.
I agree.
Because your argument would be, what if you're a general manager? You want my first round pick? Then why isn't he your starter, son? Right? Because if he's worth the first round, shouldn't he be in the starting lineup? So my argument to be, and I'm telling you, I'm just looking at the Falcons. First of all, what about their turf, right? Can you imagine Justin Fields booking down that field? Man, I would be so excited if they got Justin Fields. Because in my scenario last year, it was going to be a three-team trade. Baltimore was going to trade Chicago, Lamar Jackson, Chicago. This was during the holdout. They didn't think it was going to get done. We would get Justin Fields, and then picks would go to Baltimore. Where am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. That would be the dream scenario for Justin Fields to come home, a Kennesaw native, and played football at Harrison. He did play also at the University of Georgia, went on to Ohio State. He is a talent that I think he just – it was not a good fit in Chicago. I mean, Chicago is, outdoors, on grass, cold weather. I mean, he does have a big arm, but Matt Eberflus is a defensive guy. I think that – Raheem Morris, here's the thing about Raheem Morris. He knows both sides of the ball. He's been a wide receivers coach. He's been a defensive coordinator. I think he has time to flourish. He's been a head coach before in Tampa, and he's had success. When he was younger, they did go 10-6 in one of his years in Tampa. I think Justin Fields could flourish under Zach Robinson's system, and really this is going to be the identity of the Atlanta Falcons. We could end up seeing Michael Vick 2.0, and I cannot wait. Yeah, you're right, Mac. Let's try to get Justin Fields, do whatever it takes, offer him a second-round pick, and let's go.
Here's something else to keep in mind, too, if they want to sweeten the pot or whatever, or maybe they don't even have to lose a second-round pick. They've got two number threes this year because they got the one from Jacksonville, right?
The Calvin Ridley trade, exactly. Right.
So you might be able to just pair the two threes for him and not even give up a two. Or maybe you give up a two and a four or a five. Okay, whatever. You hate to lose that pick. But at the same token, you've got two number threes, so it's going to make up for it. But I would think a second round and like a fifth or a sixth this year would get the deal done.
All right, Mac. Well, let's go ahead and switch gears. Sure. And let's talk about Major League Baseball because, you have a show called Braves Country Radio with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterback. So you talk a lot of Braves on your show. You also do play-by-play for the Braves, and I know you're excited about the Braves season. I'm excited about the Braves season. They went 104-58. I was actually looking at their stats earlier before we came on this show. It just blows off the chart. Their offensive stats, and by the way, they actually have two good Cy Young potential pitchers in Spencer Strider and Max Fried. I know Max Fried went 8-1 last year. He didn't have a whole lot of starts. But Max Fried should be fresh going into 2024, and also Spencer Strider. I mean, you got two aces that are going to have that starting rotation. It'll also with Chris Sale. I mean, they got Bryce Elder. I like their pitching staff, but really it's the offense that's going to help the Braves win a lot of games in the regular season. But that Achilles heel, Mac, has got to be the Philadelphia Phillies. I mean, how many times have we seen the Braves match up against the Phillies in the divisional round and they end up going to Philly tied 1-1. I mean, you have got to win at Truist Park. If the Braves do face the Phillies in the divisional round, they got to go up 2-0. I mean, last year, I mean, Ranger Suarez beat the Braves in the divisional round, and I really think the Braves should win the NL East. They should host a playoff game. I know that you have that time off when you have the wild card round and the Phillies were able to get some momentum. But what do you think about really the Braves just getting over the hump and at least getting to the NLCS? But really, I think this is a World Series team. I mean, they have the second odds-on favorite to win the World Series behind the Dodgers, and that's really because the Dodgers are a great regular season team. But what do you think about the Braves' chances in 2024? And really, are they the team to beat?
Yes, yeah, so, well, first of all, when it comes to the Dodgers, I don't worry about the Dodgers, not this year. Because if you look at everything that they added, they're still, they don't know what they're going to get from Walker Buehler. That's number one. Number two, Shohei Ohtani's not pitching this year, y'all. So he's a high-paid DH. Now, I know they pushed all the money back, and so they're not getting hit with it. So they're going to bring in Tyler Glass now. I get that. He's got a lot of talent. Tyler Glasnow has had a very difficult time staying healthy. But we know the Dodgers are going to win their division. What we're concerned with is, and they talked about this at Braves Fest, it's World Series or bust, right? Because no right. longer, now, granted, we still got to get there. I don't want everyone to think that it's just a shoe-in. One way to prevent from having the Philadelphia Phillies knocking us out of the playoffs would be, let's just go sweep them this regular season. Let's knock them out and just make sure they don't make the playoffs. But the other thing would be, they've got to make, assuming we win our division, and assuming our division, the division champion, the NL East champion, is one of the top two records in the NL, means you get that week off. It's almost a week off. They've got to find a way to navigate the off season. I mean, the off week, because back to back years they've gone in, and I know they tried something different this time. They did their simulation games. That didn't work, but they got to figure out something, because when it's all said and done, it was real. The real reason why the Atlanta Braves didn't win that series is the offense didn't show up. You can point to the starting pitching. Bryce Elder being your number three starter was a problem. No one saw the Charlie Morton thing coming. But at the same token, I would argue, and we talk about this at the deadline, this isn't, you know, hindsight 2020 kind of stuff. At the deadline, we talked about the fact that Max Fried was on the IL. You didn't know what you were going to get from him when he came back. Kyle Wright was on the IL. You didn't know what you were going to get from him, and we didn't get anything. They didn't go out and get a damn starting pitcher, and that was a problem. This year, assuming they can keep these guys somewhat healthy, man, we've got a bad boy pitching game three. We've got Chris Sale, and if he can stay healthy, and Charlie Morton is a four, nobody wants to see that team. And I think they needed some dogs in that locker room. And evidently, I don't know enough about him, but Chris Sale supposedly has that for lack of a better term, that alpha dog personality, where he is going to go in and take leadership of that locker room. And I think that's huge.
Also, Mac, I got a good feeling about this year because for the first time, we're not losing a big-time free agent. You know, the year before, we lost Dansby Swanson to the Cubs.
Right.
And but Orlando Arcia actually filled in nicely this season. I mean, the big bats are showing up. I mean, you got Ronald Acuna Jr., the reigning MVP. I mean, historic 2023 season with 41 home runs and over 70 stolen bases. Matt Olson with 54 home runs. I mean, just this lineup is just potent. They just got to show up in the postseason. I think the Braves are going to have a great regular season. 104 games last year, I think they could duplicate that. But also, what do you think about the bullpen? Do you think the bullpen is improved from last season? Or what are some of the names that we expect to see in that bullpen for the Braves coming up this season?
Yeah, so along with adding that dog, that bulldog mentality with Chris Sale, we get an old face to help us win it all in 2021. Tyler Matzek is back. And they're expecting him to be hitting the ground running. They're not expecting him to, you know, this isn't a deal where we're like, oh, we hope by the All-Star break. No, he should be in the bullpen ready to roll by opening day. Do I think he's going to come out with Rose? No, he's going to struggle because that's what bullpen does. Anyone that panics over the bullpen in April doesn't understand that it's not the same bullpen by July, August. So I love the fact, it's not, I don't know if you would call it an addition, but he's healthy. I love the fact that they added Aaron Bummer. Aaron Bummer is a phenomenal left-handed pitcher that they're bringing in. I know if you look at his numbers, you're not very they don't really wow you.
Really, well, remember, he pitched in the American League, and we all know that the ERA in the American League is just a little, because they're used to the DH, and the offensive numbers are just bigger in the American League.
Well, also, something to keep in mind when you talk about, if you look at the numbers from Chris Sale and Aaron Bummer, specifically talking about the White Sox and the Red Sox, the defense of the Red Sox and the White Sox were at the bottom of the league last year. Aaron Bummer is a ground ball pitcher. Aaron Bummer is a guy, he's a lefty, has kind of a funky delivery. And what you're going to see is a guy that comes in, and though he throws hard, what he tries to do is he tries to induce ground balls. Well, we know that the Braves' defense is top-notch. So you're talking about a guy that you're going to go in, and you're going to bring Aaron Bummer early part of the season. I think what you're going to see is, let's say there's runners on first and second, two outs, sixth, seventh inning, they're trying to kill the rally. Aaron Bummer's being asked to come in and put out the fire, but what they're looking for, hopefully, is inducing a 6-4-3 inning double play, and let's go grab the bats. On top of that, obviously the big signing in the offseason was Ronaldo Lopez, and a lot of folks don't know what to expect from him. 4-year, 30 deal. He is, if you look at his splits, now, they're going to give him every opportunity to start, but I'm pulling for him to be in the bullpen. And the reason being is, if you look at his splits, he is a much more dominant pitcher when he's in the bullpen than is he as a starting pitcher. And the main reason for that is his velocity has been higher when he's been in the bullpen, I guess because he just lets it fly as opposed to going, hey, I got to make this 5 or 6 innings. The other thing is, you don't see him a second time. You don't see him a third time. So what you get is what you get. And the Braves batters at Braves Fest talked about how they remembered playing against Ronaldo Lopez in the series last year when they played the White Sox, and how they felt like he was the best pitcher on the field that day. So they're going to give him a chance to start. And he may start in the bullpen, I mean, in the rotation. But I think when it's all said and done, Ronaldo Lopez is in our bullpen. And then Pierce Johnson got re-signed. Joe Jimenez re-signed. Iglesias is back. The other names that you want to keep an eye on, Dazball Hernandez and Jackson Stevens. Jackson Stevens was brought back, and Dazball Hernandez is a guy they're really high on. On the left-hand side, we talked about Matzek. We talk about Bummer. A.J. Minter's back. And then two guys to keep an eye on that don't expect to break with the team, but they still have options, so they're fine with sending them down. Dylan Lee, who was big time injury bug last year, and then the kid they got in the trade from Texas, Ray Kerr. And people who don't know a lot about Ray Kerr, all I can tell you is this: he's a left-hander, kind of a late bloomer. He's a left-hander. They have several years of control on him, and he throws high 90s gas, a lot of swing and miss. So that, I think this bullpen, if you put Daysbal Hernandez in the bullpen on day one, I would say it's the best bullpen in baseball.
Mac, I do want to talk about Ian Anderson because he missed the entire 2023 season, had Tommy John surgery. Is he going to be back in 2024, or is he still recovering from Tommy John?
So they expect him back, but not at the beginning. And this is what they always tell you, and I'm just telling you from experience of following this junk from all teams, because I play a lot of fantasy baseball as well. They're trying to tell you sometime after Memorial Day to expect him to be back. I'm saying best case scenario is going to be after the All-Star break. Because every time they say that, all it takes is one little setback, and they shut the guy down for 2 or 3 weeks, right?
Right.
I believe what would happen with Ian Anderson, if you remember last year, the injuries that the Braves had in the starting rotation and all the up and downs. I mean, remember, I think a lot of people forget this. Opening day rotation means nothing. It was Jared Schuster and Dylan Dodd. They were opening day rotation. Schuster's now no longer with the organization, and Dodd is a guy who could come in and make some starts, but he's not being projected anywhere close to the starting rotation. I would say best case scenario, Ian Anderson gets somewhere between 5 to 10 starts this year. And they may be sporadic. You may get Ian Anderson when, let's say he is ready by sometime in June. You might only get 2 starts from him in June and they send him down. Because as long as they got options, they can keep sending him down.
Macko, in your opinion, what are some breakout stars that could really have an impact on the Braves this season? I was looking at some of the top prospects. I really like A.J. Smith-Shawver. But is there any position players that could get a breakout role?
I would say one of the guys would be our new starting left fielder, Jared Kelenic. And for people who aren't familiar with him, so Eddie's gone. Eddie Rosario's gone. And Kevin Pillar is gone as well. And the main reason why Kevin Pillar is gone, look, I heard this in an interview with AA, and I'm telling you, he didn't name him by name, but he might as well have. He talked about building the bench, and he said being able to bring guys in that are accepting of knowing that they're not going to be out there every day, right? Kevin Pillar in some post-game interviews last year, if you saw him, he had a couple of big pinch hits, a couple of big games, not many, but a big games throughout the year. And one of the things I heard him say twice in those post-game interviews, you know, where they're dousing him with Gatorade and all that stuff, is that if I have a chance to play every day, I can still hit. And I think it wasn't really a jab towards Snicker or AA. I think it was a jab towards Eddie Rosario. But I believe that's why Pilar's not back. It's not just the fact that the Braves may not have wanted him back, but also I think Pilar wants to go somewhere. And I'm just going to use this as an example, maybe a bad example. Pilar would rather play for the Kansas City Royals in left field for 140 games a year than play for the Atlanta Braves for 20 games a year, right? So Jared Kelenic, who came over in the Seattle trade, and people may wonder, like, well, why in the world did it? I think it's going to be a bigger deal than what people realize. Because Jared Kelenic, one of his problems was last year, so he got off to a hot start, and then he had a very infamous situation where he kicked a bucket or something. He kicked like a Gatorade bucket or something. And the short of it is, it put him out, and when he came back, he struggled. But last year, all in all, for the 2023 season, Kelenic hit 11 home runs, 49 RBI, had an OPS of, I believe it was just under, it was very short. I'm trying to pull it up right now. I want to say that the OPS was just under 8. and he played sparingly. He did have 49 RBIs, by the way, which is not nothing.
Right.
Now this is a guy that played about a little over half the year. In Seattle's offense and in the Seattle Mariners stadium, he's heading to Atlanta. Short porch, incredible offense. I think Jared Kelenic could be a guy that people are like, why did they trade him away? But what it had to do with is that Seattle was trying to move money, and Atlanta was willing to pay to get Kelenic over, and they didn't have to give up a whole lot as far as prospects. And so I've seen it and realized something about Kelenic. So they have a few years of control left with him as well. He's 24 years old. He'll be 25 in July. And for people who don't follow baseball, 26, 27 years old is where they believe is when a hitter takes off, right? So this kid could be, and if you're, I'll tell you what, we'll do it next hour because we're about to run out of time, but I'll give you what I would give as the batting order.
Well, Mac, I am so excited that you were able to come on my show. It's the first crossover show with the Sports Beat of Richard Holdridge and Braves Country Radio with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks. I'm going to be on Mac's show in the next hour. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Sports Beat with Richard Holdridge. Like and subscribe to the Facebook channel. Subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. I'm also found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcasts. Hope everybody has a great rest of your day, and we will talk to you tomorrow. Bye, everybody.
Country Radio is next, y'all. Keep it locked in.
Wishbone Fried Chicken is back in a brand new location, 31 Jackson Street, Suite A here in Noonan. Same great taste, the best chicken around, fish dinners. Open Monday through Saturday, 10:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Dine in, take out. It's Wishbone Fried Chicken, right next door to their former location, bringing you the best chicken around. So great. Wishbone Fried Chicken, 31 Jackson Street, Suite A, here in Noonan.
Hey, sports fans, it's Rod Peterson here, host of The Rod Peterson Show, inviting you to join us daily for 2 hours of Atlanta's funnest sports talk right here on WQEE. I say fun because it is. You've never heard a show like it because we make the listeners a part of the show every day between noon and 2 p.m. Eastern. You'll hear plenty of the best sports talk, including the latest on the Falcons, the Braves, and more. And who knows, you might even hear you. That's the Rod Peterson Show, daily at noon, right here on WQEE 99.1 FM.
Hey, sports fans. Weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern. Drive time. WQEE. Braves Country is a Southern sports talk show with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks. That's Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks. Weekdays, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. right here on WQEE 99.1 FM.
Help protect your family from flu this season by taking 3 easy steps. First, get yourself and your family a flu shot. It's quick and can protect you all season. Second, take everyday actions to help prevent the spread of germs like flu. Cover your cough, stay home from work or school if you're sick, and wash your hands often. Third, there are drugs that can treat flu illness. These work best when started early. Learn more at cdc.gov/fightflu.
At Jersey Mike's, they slice your order fresh right in front of you. And let me tell you, watching that can send a rush of emotions through a person. Excitement, impatience, baby-like wonder, indecisive, anticipatory chewing, nervous pacing, happy claps, and finally, jealousy, because that's this guy's sub. I should order one. Good idea.
Sliced right in front of you. It's a Jersey Mike's thing. A sub above.
When you really need something to get you through a long graduation ceremony, Trolley Sour Gummy Worms are there to give you a thrill. With varieties like Trolley Sour Bursting Crawlers, the worms' soft and chewy texture, surprising flavor combinations, and neon bright colors will give everyone a reason to celebrate. So when you want to notch the festivities up a couple degrees, Trolley Sour Gummy Worms are the perfect way for everyone to celebrate. Shop now for any trolley that crawls your way.
You've been listening to another episode of the Sports Beat with Richard Holdridge, presented by Georgia Alabama Sports Live. You can catch an episode daily on WQEE 99.1 FM The Key, Monday through Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. This is a podcast that covers local sports to the Chattahoochee Valley. If you would like to catch a replay of the show, you can download an episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.